Hey everybody, how's it going? Thanks for joining me this afternoon. I am Oren McIntyre. So yesterday there was a rush through, I should say Wednesday evening, there was a bill rushed through the House of Representatives, and there was a lot of talk about what it did, a lot of kind of panic over what is going on with this bill. And I think that the concerns are very well founded. I think that the response to the bill was proportional to how bad it is. It is a very bad bill. However, there was some hyperbole. There was some misconceptions over what this bill does formally, as opposed to what it will inevitably do through the civil rights law system. And so I wanted to take the time to go ahead and break down this bill in detail, because like I said, the concerns are well-founded. This is a very bad bill. This is a very dangerous bill. And I have seen some people who I like saying, oh, it's not a big deal. It's not, you know, don't, we're overblowing it. And no, it's a very bad bill. This is this bill is very suspect. However, it does not do some of the more egregious things that people believe it does. And I want to explain the mechanisms of kind of how this works, because it's not just this bill, this H.R. 690 bill, which is the problem. See, this bill is supposed to be about anti-Semitism. It's supposed to be about combating the anti-Semitism that is supposed to be raging across college campuses right now. We see all the protests, the kind of anti-Israel protests and the Palestinian protests. Obviously, there is some degree of anti-Semitism there, but you can go ahead and criticize the nation of Israel without being anti-Semitic. You have to be able to do that. If you can't, then we're saying you can't criticize foreign governments. And that is terrifying. That's not okay. And so this bill is supposed to be helping with the hate on college campuses, right? It's supposed to be barring that. And of course, it passed with a large amount of Republicans, as it has to since the Republicans control the House. That means it'll probably sail through the Senate. So this is probably going to become the law. It's already passed through the one chamber that would probably give it any kind of real pushback. And there are only a few. And to their credit, guys like Matt Gaetz and Thomas Massie and Chip Roy were speaking out forcefully against this. So credit where it's due. There are some people who did see how dangerous this bill is. And so I don't want to just say, oh, all the Republicans failed on this. There were some loud voices saying how dangerous this bill is. But it did ultimately fly through. And so I want to get into what this bill says, because, this is very serious. And a lot of people kind of overblew the formal things it's going to do. But I don't think people overstated what it will eventually do, or how serious this bill is, because it will, I think, change the way that law is applied in the United States, especially civil rights law. And if you paid any attention to this channel, you understand that civil rights law is the actual Constitution of the United States. And that's a critical thing to remember as we dive into H.R. 6090. Because, yes, the changes it makes are, they seem very procedural in nature. It's mostly about definitions and applications of title, whatever, of your civil rights law that you don't even know what it does. And that can make it feel like, oh, it's not as big a problem as it is. And I want to dispel that myth. It is a huge problem. However, to be clear at the outset, a lot of people were acting like this bill was going to make it illegal for members of Congress to criticize Israel, or, you know, some guy who's talking bad about Netanyahu's going to get snatched off a street corner by kind of, some kind of FBI squad, or, you know, that there would be the banning of the Bible in churches. There could be an interpretation of this that might ban the Bible in some settings, and we'll talk about that for sure, which is bad enough, again. But I want to make it clear what this bill actually does, because it's important when you talk about this. You should be impassioned. This is an attack on the First Amendment. This is an attack on freedom of speech. This is an attack on just the natural right of people to go ahead and criticize a foreign government. Why is a foreign government getting special protections in the United States? That's insane. It is all of those things. However, it is not as explicit as people made it out to be. And so when you explain this to somebody, you don't want to just come out and be like, they're banning, you know, they're going to throw everybody who disagrees with Israel in jail, because it's going to make you sound like a crazy conspiracy nut. You should be very forceful about how dangerous this bill is. But I want to arm you with kind of the understanding of what's really happening here so that you, when you're talking about this, you have a good idea of what's going on. All right. So HB 6090, what does it really do? So the first thing is, you can just go read the bill for yourselves, guys. There's a lot of legislation that's overly long and complicated. You don't want to read through it. It's put together by a million different lobbyists and stuff, and it's thousands of pages. This is pretty short, so we're actually just going to read through a lot of the bill together today because it's pretty short. However, and this is going to be a key factor, the shortness of the bill in this rare instance is actually a problem, because a lot of what the bill does, and this is the real danger of the bill, this is ultimately the scariest part of the bill, is that it places the sovereignty of parts of the United States government outside of the United States. It takes the decision-making and definitions of a foreign international NGO and makes that the central aspect of kind of how this part of U.S. law is going to work. And that is a terrible precedent. And I'm going to go into why this bill is not the first thing to set this precedent. In fact, Donald Trump has done this. Ron DeSantis has done this. Christine Noem has done this. And they have all farmed the sovereignty of the United States out to the same international organization. Okay. So this has been going on for a while. This is not something that was just dreamed up by Congress, by the House of Representatives a couple days ago. This has been in the works for a long time. And that's not better, that's worse, because that means that this bill is being advanced as part of an agenda, and they find this single moment a good reason, a good excuse to move things forward. And you should always worry about that. It's always the state of emergency, which creates the willingness to advance bad legislation. And so that means that they know what was in this. They've been planning to advance this, and they saw their opportunity to implement this. And you have to wonder, why is that happening? So we'll go ahead and get into what the bill actually says. So H.R. 6090 says, to provide the consideration for the consideration of a definition of anti-Semitism set forth by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance for the enforcement of federal anti-discrimination laws concerning educational programs or activities or other purposes. All right, so what is this bill doing? First and foremost, it is linking the definition of anti-Semitism to one provided by this International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, which was founded in Sweden and currently resides in Germany. So right away, we have a problem, because we're defining the terms that we need to understand U.S. law by the dictates of a foreign power. And it's something that is unaccountable to U.S. legislators, to U.S. voters, anything. There is no recourse for this. It's all being linked to a foreign organization, one that's not even a government organization. So we can't even call on the government of that foreign power and understand what's going on there. It's just some NGO out there. So no accountability. This is a very regime move. This is a very total state managerial elite move to place the sovereignty outside of the United States, outside the accountability, even though we're a democracy. No democratic process is holding this accountable, and making this unattached organization that's not accountable to any government or any voters, and they're the ones who are inserting the definition of what anti-Semitism is going to be for the purposes of this law. Now, this law specifically addresses education. Obviously, we understand what's going on with the protests on campuses right now. One of the major concerns is, of course, the safety of people on that campus, as it should be. That's the one thing that should be a constant. Everyone should be safe. You have the right to criticize Israel, the right to criticize Palestine. You have the right to be anti-Palestinian or anti-Jewish. You have the right. Those things are not illegal. They might be gross. You shouldn't have ethnic hatred, but they are legal. And there is no law, nor should there be any law or restriction against those things. So this is addressing what's happening on college campuses. Let's see. It says here in section 2, Title 6 of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, and national origin in programs and activities that receive federal financial assistance. Okay, so this is the first thing we need to understand. This is going to be operating under civil rights law. And again, if you're familiar with anything about this channel, if you've ever heard me speak, you know that the Civil Rights Act, whatever its good intentions, whatever the honorable intentions of the people who might have passed it, supported it, people who think it's something that's good today, civil rights law is the secondary and preeminent, I should say, it overrides our current constitution. It's our secret second constitution, and it overrides the one that we think about today. Civil rights law dictates the way that all of our public organizations, our corporations, our educational institutions, our media bodies, everything that drives our current society, it regulates pretty much everything they can do. It's one massive excuse for the government to reach in and spread its ideology through every single organization in the United States. And so, of course, they're not going to come out with a law that says, oh, the Bible's banned and we're throwing you in jail for criticizing Israel. And, you know, you're going to jail if you say you don't like, you know, people from Israel. They're not going to pass a bill saying that. They're not quite that bold. But what we will do is we will use civil rights law, as is so often the case. So much of the left, and sometimes the right, is very enthusiastic to use civil rights law to apply pressure, to apply this thumb on the scale, to nudge or sometimes throw an elbow into organizations to make sure that they conform to what they want done here. So it's making it clear that they're going to be using the Civil Rights Act, and specifically section or Title 6 of the Civil Rights Act, which is the one that addresses the distribution of or the regulation, what accounts for discrimination to any organization that receives federal funds, especially education funds, right? So here's the first thing we need to understand, and this makes it clear in the bill. It is already illegal. It's already illegal to discriminate against Jewish people for being Jewish under the Civil Rights Act. That's already illegal. It's already in there. You can see it. It prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, national origin. You know, the Israel is a nation, so you can't discriminate against people. I guess you would call being a Jew a ethnicity, but it's going to be color. It's going to be covered under this. So to be clear, discrimination against Jews just based on being Jewish in organizations that are federally funded is already illegal under the Civil Rights Act, Title 6. So you have to ask yourself, if it's already illegal, if they're already protected, why do we need additional laws? Why are we getting a law specifically just for anti-Semitism? Why aren't we getting a law for anti-Asian discrimination? Why aren't we getting a law for anti-white discrimination? Why don't we have specific carve-outs for all these groups that are not currently, even though it's already technically illegal to discriminate against them, it's already illegal to discriminate against white people according to this act. But all of these colleges are already teaching anti-white courses. They're having separate graduations white people aren't supposed to attend. That's already occurring. That's already happening. So under the law, as it is now, it's supposed to protect white people, and it doesn't. And it's already supposed to protect Jewish people. If you're saying that it doesn't protect them, why are only Jewish people getting this specific special carve-out, this specific special law? Title VI is not unclear here. So this is already illegal. So what are we doing here? Well, we'll see as we read on. All right. So if we go down here to our findings, it says anti-Semitism is on the rise in the United States and impacting Jewish students. And it says the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance And their working definition on anti-Semitism is a vital tool which helps individuals understand and identify various manifestations of anti-Semitism. So basically, the entirety of what this bill is going to do is it's going to make the standard of the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance the standard for the federal government when it comes to evaluating questions of discrimination under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. All right, so let's get down to business, because Section 5 and 6 are where we actually rock and roll here. In reviewing, investigating, or deciding whether there has been a violation of Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 on the basis of race, color, or national origin, based on an individual's actual or perceived shared Jewish ancestry or Jewish ethnic character, the Department of Education shall take into consideration the definition of anti-Semitism as part of the department's assessment as to whether the practice has been motivated by anti-Semitic intent. All right, so that means we need to go ahead and check out this definition. And this is what had everybody up in arms. If you saw this being shared on Twitter, this is where people kind of blew up, and with good reason. Let me go ahead and share that one. So this is the definition that people were worried about. And let's go through, because it says we're going to use the definition and the examples provided by this international organization, which again has no accountability to anyone in the United States. All right. So first it says that anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jewish people. That's it. Like, that's the only thing that it actually says in the bill, is that anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jewish people. Now, if that seems very broad, that's because it is incredibly broad and wildly open to interpretation, which is the whole point, right? That's the beauty of the Civil Rights Act and the following laws that have built this giant leviathan that allow the government to go in and alter all kinds of things and regulate all kinds of things, is that you get to mess with this definition at any time. So let's look at the examples provided by this organization of what could be anti-Semitism in the contemporary social order. All right, so contemporary examples of anti-Semitism in public life, the media, schools, and workplace, and in the religious sphere. Oh, that's interesting. So inside the religious sphere, they mean churches, right? Churches or mosques. When they say inside the religious sphere, they mean examples inside places of worship that aren't Jewish. So already we have a very big problem. So taking in account the overall context, include but not limited to, notice that key, not limited to, so we could always add more, calling for, aiding, or justifying the killing or harming of Jews in the name of radical ideology, or any extremist view of religion. All right, I think that one's pretty standard. That one's fair. I think we could give everybody that. That's actual anti-Semitism. That's actual, like, you should attack someone or hurt someone because of them being Jewish. That is absolutely wrong. It's already illegal, so obviously we can understand that one being a problem. Making mendacious, dehumanizing, demonizing, or stereotypical allegations about Jews as such. Or the power of Jews as collective, such as, and especially not exclusively, the myth about a world Jewish conspiracy or Jews controlling the media, economy, government, or social institutions. All right, again, you can feel how you want about any and all of those accusations, but all of them are allowed under the First Amendment. Like, you have a right to be able to say those things, even if some of them might be untrue or you might feel they're malicious. They are absolutely allowed under the First Amendment, but they are triggering the discrimination aspect of Title VI. Also, accusing Jews as people of being responsible for real or imagined wrongdoing committed by a single Jewish person or group, or even acts committed by non-Jews. Okay, fair, I guess, but this happens to whites all the time, right? You are, in fact, there are large parts of academia that are specifically, you know, they write books about this, about whiteness, the problem of whiteness, the influence of whiteness, the collective guilt of whites for everything that's happened. So, okay, I can get down with the idea that we shouldn't be applying this to Jewish people. But again, why this special carve out just for Jewish people when we know that white people who are also, in theory, protected by the same law that already protects Jewish people are not currently being protected in this way? It seems very strange that this is one carve out that is not allowed for other groups. Denying the fact, going back to their definition, denying the fact, scope, or mechanism or intentionality of the genocide of Jewish people at the hands of the National Socialists of Germany and supporters and accomplices during World War II, the Holocaust. Again, you can feel however you want about people asking whatever questions, feeling that that's malicious, but that is all allowed under the Constitution. That is all protected by the First Amendment. You can think it's gross. You can think it's nasty. You can think it's unnecessary, but this is all protected. And now it's anti-Semitism, which violates violates Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, accusing the Jews as a people or Israel as a state of inventing or exaggerating the Holocaust, accusing Jewish citizens of being more loyal to Israel or to the alleged priorities of Jews nationwide than to the interests of their own nation, denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination, e.g., by claiming the existence of Israel is a racist endeavor. Okay, so this one's a huge problem, right? Because this is directly counting as discrimination the questioning of a foreign government, right? This is not about Jews. This is about Israel, the state of Israel. And we're told all the time, and I'm more than willing to accept this, that Israel and Jewish people are separate. These are two separate things. And so you can look at a contemporary foreign government and say, I like or don't like something they do. And that is not criticism of Jewish people as such. But here, under the definition that is now being accepted by the United States federal government for the application of civil rights law, it specifically says that if you call the state of Israel racist, you are violating the federal statute. Now, you're not going to jail, again, to be clear, okay? That's not what this law does. They're not snatching you off a street corner. This is not about, you know, they're not going to throw you in jail for this. However, it will open you up to legal action. It could be a violation of civil rights law, which again is not going to put you in jail, but could open you up to losing federal funds or facing a discrimination lawsuit. We just saw a gas station chain, Sheetz, get hit with a civil rights lawsuit because it wouldn't hire felons, because it was making people pass a background check, a criminal background check, and because minorities are more likely to commit crime and therefore more likely to have a criminal record, they are more likely to not get hired, and that counts as discrimination under the disparate impact part of civil rights law. So they got hit with a civil rights complaint. And even though the Biden administration specifically said, the DOJ specifically said, that they were not being overtly racist. Yes, we know you're not being racist. We know you're not intending to be racist. But because you are de facto not hiring as many minority people, because you're running background checks, criminal background checks, you are still in violation of the law. This opens up the same problem here. So you are open up to a civil rights lawsuit. You could be found in breach of the Civil Rights Act. You could lose federal funding because you criticize the state of Israel in the wrong way. I mean, that's obviously in there. That there's just no way to deny that. Applying double standards by requiring of it a behavior or not expected or demanded of another democratic nation. So again, not Jewish people, but the nation of Israel specifically. And this is a huge problem. Either we're conflating these two things or we're not. okay? You can't play this game. Either Jewish people and the nation of Israel are separate, as you have to say, if you look earlier, right, it says you're not allowed to accuse people of dual loyalty to, or saying that you have more loyalty to Israel than your host nation. Okay, that makes perfect sense as long as people are identifying as part of their host nation. But if you have this here saying, oh, well, actually the nation and Jewish people are the same thing. Well, it's like, okay, that can't be all right. Like, you can't put that into federal law, because if you do, then that means that any criticism of Israel is de facto anti-Semitism, which is the point. That's what they're doing here. Using the symbol and images associated with classic anti-Semitism, claims of Jews killing Jesus or blood libel to characterize Israel or Israelis. Again, once again, not Jews, not American Jews, not Jews in America, but the state of Israel. Why is this the case? Why are we importing this language into American legislation? Okay. If it was particularly, I still think it would be a problem to create a carve out just for Jewish people in a law that is supposed to cover everybody. But at least if it was only talking about American Jews, then it would at least make sense. It would be in the context of America. It would be wholly contained under the standards of America. But instead, it's talking about the nation state of Israel. And we have another problem here, because the claim of Jews killed Jesus is in the Bible. I know a lot of people have a problem with that. I'm sorry, it's in all four Gospels. I'm reading through the book of Acts right now. It's very clearly in there, okay? It's throughout the New Testament. Now, a lot of people can say, we all killed Jesus. That's true, in a very real sense. But you could say that the Romans executed Jesus. That's also true. They are the ones that ultimately dropped the hammer. But the Bible is not unclear about who asked for the death of Jesus. It's very clear about that over and over and over again. It's not ambiguous. And so what you're doing here is saying that holding the belief or espousing a belief that is very clearly said about the historical reality of Jesus' execution would be a violation because it characterizes Israel in a bad light, which again, not the Jews, but Israel, the nation state, conflating those two things over and over and over again. This definition does that. That's super dangerous. That is incredibly dangerous. Drawing comparisons of contemporary Israel policy to that of the Nazis. I mean, literally all that our government does today is call people on the right Nazis. They call everybody, your MAGA hat wearing grandpa, everybody who's a conservative, right? All they do is call these people fascists and Nazis. But now, if you want to say the state of Israel, which again is supposed to be separate from the Jews, if you call something they're doing and you compare it to something the Nazis did, then you're in the violation, again, of federal civil rights law and holding Jews collectively responsible for actions of the state of Israel. All right, so let's go back to the bill real quick, because I want to show you a few more things. So I listened to Will Chamberlain on this. And I like Will. I've had Will on the show before. He's the first guy who I ever heard talk about the need to seize the endowments. So Will is a guy who, we've disagreed on a number of things, but he's somebody who I've always got along with, and he's always given me a fair hearing and has always listened when I'm talking. And so I listen to him because he was one of these guys saying, look, this bill is not a big deal. It doesn't do anything important. It's not a huge issue. Just calm down and don't worry about it. And so what he brought up and what he pointed out at the end of this bill is that it says here at the end, nothing in this act will be construed to diminish or infringe upon any right protected under the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. And his take was, well, it says it right there, guys. It says it right there. It says that it can't violate the First Amendment. So it's not going to censor any of your speech. It's not going to do any of this stuff, because it says in the bill that it can't violate the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. I hear him, but I have some problems there. So first, again, the Civil Rights Act is used very regularly to get around our constitutional rights. It does it all the time. The Civil Rights Act is basically the easy button, the fast lane to get around the Constitution as such. And so the idea that just because somewhere in the bill they throw in the phrase that this isn't going to violate the First Amendment of the Constitution, that is not the protection for me that you are saying that it is. Because many things in civil rights law are used to punish and quash speech. And he said specifically, oh, well, if this is unconstitutional, then all of Title VI of the Civil Rights Act is unconstitutional. And my answer would be, yes. Yes, it is. That's the problem. Like I'm on board with that understanding. The whole problem is the structure of this. And that's something really important that you need to understand when you're explaining to people what's going on with this bill. If you come up there and you're just like, oh, they're going to throw everybody in jail because you disagree with Israel, they're going to look at you like you've lost your mind, because that's not what it does. But what it does do is it alters a critical definition. It farms it out to a foreign organization. And it embeds it in deeply in civil rights law. And yeah, civil rights law here just applies in a specific instance to the education system. But guys, how often does it stay there? Remember, think back to the Dear Colleague letter from Barack Obama, which turned on the trans bathroom thing, right? He writes a Dear Colleague letter, says, doesn't even use an executive order, can't even be bothered to use the official power of the office. He just writes a letter saying, by the way, guys, this is how we're going to interpret civil rights law going forward when it comes to public education. And like that, overnight, Target and all these other businesses and all these other places switch their policies to follow the new understanding of civil rights law. It's not even a formal alteration of civil rights law. It was just saying, here's how we're going to interpret this particular thing. We're not going to pass any new legislation. It's not like a House bill that we have here. It's nothing official. We're just, as an administration, going to start applying it this way. And all of a sudden, every school in the United States flips a switch, and many private organizations throughout the United States follow suit. And eventually, that becomes the standard across everything. Corporations, NGOs, everything are suddenly doing what was put through that Dear Colleague letter. That's the power that civil rights legislation, or regulation rather, has in the United States. So altering something in civil rights law is not like, oh, it's just some little tweak. No, it's not. It's critical. It's critical. It impacts everything. Okay. And once it's put into civil rights law in the education system, it invariably goes out and impacts every other organization in this country. So I don't think it's fair to say, oh, well, it only impacts these colleges. It's a well-tailored thing. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's actually very dangerous. Okay. Now, to be fair, one of the reasons Will points out, I'm going to give him his due here. He says, one of the reasons you shouldn't be worried about this is that we already have this regulation through an executive order. And in fact, you can actually see that in the bill itself. If you look up here, it says that it's only following a previous executive order that was put into place by Donald Trump. It's actually just following a previous executive order put in place by Donald Trump in 2019. So let's be really clear here. We're going to slay all the sacred cows. We're holding everybody accountable. This isn't just something that started with the current Congress. This goes back to many different places, including what is many people's favorite conservative president. So what does that executive order say? So here's the executive order from Donald Trump. He did it in 2019. It's the executive order on combating anti-Semitism. And he says here, in enforcing Title VI, identifying evidence of discrimination based on race, color, or national origin, all executive departments and agencies charged with enforcement of Title VI will do the following, and it does the exact same thing. So this is just a codification into law, into formal law, of an executive order. Now, that is important because executive orders can be easily rescinded. They don't carry the same force of law as the actual legislation. However, this was already in place. So it already says that you're going to apply and see again here the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. Once again, you see their influence here. We're going to go ahead and tie the definition to this foreign body, this foreign organization that has no accountability. And once again, you see this kind of disclaimer at the end. Well, but it can't violate the First Amendment. Now, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, if it's here and it's already in place and that's already the way that, these departments are operating, then how big of a deal can it be? But again, if it wasn't a big deal and was already placed, why the importance of getting it through? Why this sudden rush of bipartisan carve out to reinforce something that was already illegal under the previous act? Now, according to Will, this is his, and you can watch his stream on this. He's got it on his Twitter. Again, I don't want to mischaracterize what he said. So, you know, it's a pretty short, it's only like 12 minutes. You can go ahead and follow it. But his argument was, well, the people who oppose this, and there are many left-wing groups, by the way, that opposed this executive order, the people who opposed this opposed it because they said it was going to have a chilling effect. And of course, I think they're right. I think that's 100% correct. I mean, you know, God forgive me for agreeing with a leftist, but obviously, if you encode this stuff into civil rights law, this has a chilling effect on every organization in the United States. So organizations in the United States start thinking, well, I could face civil rights legislation or lose my federal, or I could face a civil rights lawsuit, or I could lose my federal funding if I criticize Israel, if I have harsh words for a certain set of people, or possibly for teaching the Bible or having religious symbols that people associate with anti-Semitism. Now, do I think you'll probably get a full-on, like, oh, you're losing federal funding because at some point you read through the Gospel of Mark? No, probably not. But it is very clear that that's a possibility, that it has a chilling effect, because you've tied the definition and broadened the definition of anti-Semitism so wide that almost anything, including just saying you don't like the state of Israel, could possibly violate it. Now, I don't have to worry about this. Again, no one's going to drop from the sky, rappel into my house and pull me, out of a studio or something for saying, that I disagree with Israel. That's not what this bill does. But if you have federal funding, if you're an educational institution, then it absolutely could end up having a serious impact on your employability, your ability to operate your organization, your continued accreditation, and all of those standards. Again, and this is the really critical part, all of those standards filter out to other organizations. The civil rights law is regularly the thing that shapes the best practices and policies of all the other corporations and entities in the United States. So once this is the law in an educational setting, it quickly becomes the law across the rest of the federal government, and then quickly becomes the law or the policy of every other corporation, every other entity, every other non-government organization in the United States. It does have a chilling effect. And to be fair, Will acknowledged that. He said, yes, it does have a chilling effect. And his argument was, well, maybe we should have right-wing chilling effects, because the left does this with civil rights law all the time. And I give him credit here, because, saying, hey, we should use a weapon, we should use power. If it's going to be sitting on the table, we should just go ahead and use it. To some extent, that makes sense, right? I'm somebody who's for the use of power in pursuit of political goals. But he says, oh, well, we should be applying right-wing power. Maybe we should have an anti-white version of this bill. Maybe we should make multiple versions of this bill and apply this, right? But right now, this is the only version of this bill. And it's hard not to notice that this bill is specifically only for the protection of Jewish people. And not just them, but the state of Israel, which is repeatedly mentioned in the examples given by the organization to which the definition is farmed out. So who does this protect? Sorry, but it's not protecting the right. That's just not a fair summation of the pressure being applied here. Okay. It's very clear about who it's protecting, even though Title VI already tells you that it's illegal to discriminate against Jewish people. It's broadening what that means to the point where any criticism is of Israel could trigger this. Even certain Bible passages could trigger this. Okay. Now, again, specifically in educational situations, specifically tied to federal funding. So in the formal definition, it doesn't affect you. It doesn't affect your business unless you're a teacher or something like that. You could stand on a street corner. You could write a newspaper column. You could still have freedom of speech in this way. It doesn't impact technically the internet or any of these things, but the chilling effect does, and that is very real. And Will acknowledged that in his stream. And so I think we need to if we're acknowledging that's what this does. And the bill specifically explains that it doesn't just do it for Jewish people, but it does it for the state of Israel. If the definition by the international organization adopted in the bill says explicitly that, then we need to understand that's what's really happening in this bill. Again, it's not as bad as some people made it out to be. There's a lot of hyperbole about what the bill does. But what the bill does is still horrible. It is still a terrible piece of legislation. It is an incredibly dangerous precedent. For multiple reasons, because it places sovereignty outside the United States to an unaccountable international organization, because it creates a special carve out for a group that is already protected in what is supposed to be a colorblind manner under Title VI of the Civil Rights Amendment, and because it obviously has a chilling effect that stretches well beyond its formal application inside Title VI and its educational boundaries. And for all of those reasons, people should be up in arms about this. It is incredibly dangerous. And the fact that it was just kind of blown through and created very quickly and passed very quickly in the House says something. It's a real problem. The House can't agree on border security. The House can't agree on all kinds of things. But this flies through. And again, I want to make it clear that it is not alone. This language is in the executive order that we see here from Donald Trump. And it's also in Ron DeSantis, my governor, who I like in a lot of areas, but is really bad on this. Ron DeSantis ties the definition of anti-Semitism in the Florida bill, HB 148, to this same organization, the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. And he's not alone, because Kristi Noem of South Dakota has also recently passed an anti-Semitism bill. And the anti-Semitism bill uses the definition provided by, you guessed it, the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, and uses the same very vague words of a certain perception of Jewish people, and brags, the press release that she did on this, brags about how they adopted this particular definition. Now, when I see all these different politicians, left and right, get excited about adopting a particular definition handed out by an international organization, I start to wonder what's going on, right? That's not great. Again, that really gives you the understanding that there was a concerted effort to get this particular, for some reason, this particular definition from this particular organization that is not accountable to anyone in the United States, is not based in the United States, is not made up of members from the United States. It's not run by even Jewish people in the United States. It is specifically an international organization with no accountability to any politician or any voters. And it is specifically mentioned as kind of the decider of what anti-Semitism is for Florida, South Dakota, the federal government. Like, that is not good. That is not good at all. Now, interestingly, and this was brought up to me by my good buddy Charlemagne right before I went to the stream. I'm glad he did this, because this is really critical. Interestingly, there does seem to be some disagreement here. There does seem to be a split happening on the left. So let me bring this up real quick. So the SPLC has released a statement. And the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, who writes a number of hit pieces on many people, and tries. It's a malicious hate speech organization designed to destroy people. So this is not my endorsement of the SPLC. This is not me saying anything good about the SPLC. They're terrible people. They're paid spear merchants. They're parasites on the United States. They are fear mongers. They are hateful actors. They really should just, the organization should be dismantled. However, the SPLC says here that it opposes H.R. 6090 and the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. It says, today the SPLC Action Fund announces its opposition to H.R. 6090, known as the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. In a letter to members of the U.S. House of Representatives, SPLC Fund urges the U.S. Senate to reject the flawed legislation. And they specifically mention the fact that the definition being adopted is from this international organization. It says that they do not like the fact that it is being adopted in this way. It says not the way to combat this problem. So it's very interesting. It's very interesting that we have the split on the left. From more explicitly, Jewish organizations on the left, and then an organization that would probably be characterized more of like the woke left, right? So we see that inter-leftist warfare occurring simultaneously. They're speaking out against this bill because I think they care about free speech. They're not because they see the dangers of the Civil Rights Act and its imposition on all of American life. But simply because their political faction is less interested in, in protecting Jewish people or, silencing criticism of the state of Israel, and instead is very ardently against the state of Israel, is much more pro-Palestinian in its its mission. Now, again, there are no good sides here. Like both of these people are trying to crush your freedom of speech. Right, the inter-leftist warfare is hateful towards you. So there's no reason to pick a side here. That this doesn't make the SPLC the good guys, even though they're opposing a dangerous piece of legislation in this particular instance. But it is interesting to see this development. This means that the division inside the left is real. It's not going away anytime soon. It is dangerous for the left. It is truly a serious fault line in their coalition, and they need to figure out how to address it, which is why, again, I encourage Republican governors, politicians. I mean, obviously seeing this bill pass, that they're probably not going to be listening to this, but I'll do my best again. Do not involve yourselves in it. Let the left fight it out. There's only victory for you if these two forces are battling against each other. This has nothing to do with you. Now, very interestingly, as the left is trying to crush any criticism, I guess, of Israel through this bill, and the right is kind of on board with them on this, simultaneously, the White House has announced that it will be trying to open up a pathway for some Palestinian refugees. So let me bring that up here. White House announces that it will consider welcoming refugees from Palestine, from Gaza. All right. So this is amazing because, of course, as the government is already saying, okay, there's a huge problem. These protests, we don't like them. These pro-Palestinian, anti-Israeli protests, we need to shut these down. We need to shut down what's happening on campuses. We need to enact new laws that could possibly make what's happening there illegal or threaten the funding of the schools if they allow them to continue. While they're passing that legislation, they're also opening up the borders of the United States to Palestinian refugees. And of course, it starts with, it says here in the story that it's going to start with people who have family in the United States, they have relatives, this kind of thing. But we've been here before, right? This kind of chain migration, this, well, first you let in someone who's a relative, and then you let in the relative of the relative, and then, you got to get all the kids in and blah, blah, blah. And before you know it, everyone who's ever been related to anyone in Palestine can move into the United States. This is what happens with many different people from across the world who move into the United States. This is how we get the chain migration thing started. So this is incredibly dangerous. Nobody wants to have Palestinian refugees. All of the countries around Israel right now do not want to take Palestinian refugees. The ones that are already here are a problem for the regime. So why would you want to bring Palestinian refugees in? It's insane. It's absolutely insane. But this is where we're at, right? It seems incredibly contradictory until you realize that none of this is done for the benefit of the American people. None of this is done to protect the American people. None of this is done to, you know, make a brighter future for the American people. And really, it's disgusting because this continued attack on the United States through things like this legislation and through mass migration is horrible. It's an infringement on the rights of the people of the United States, and it's relentless, and it needs to stop. Hopefully, the level of criticism that has been labeled, and to give credit to a lot of people on the right, there are a lot of people on the right, even people who are vehemently pro-Israel, like super vocally pro-Israel, have said this bill is garbage, that this bill is dangerous. So there is a wide consensus, even in kind of mainstream conservative circles, that this bill is a problem, at least in the commentariat, that this is a problem. There have been a lot of vocal opposition to this. And so you hope that the lack of popularity, both in the conservative sphere and even on with many less leftists, as we see with the SPLC's press release there, you hope that that means that they will go ahead and block this in the Senate. But I'm not very hopeful about that fact. All right, guys, let's go ahead and take a look at the questions of the day here. Let's see. Paladin YYZ says, I'm disappointed, Oren. Yesterday your show was all about good Christian metal. Today you're shining a light on blasphemy, a dark-themed satanic Canadian metal band with songs like Antichrist and the Bud of the Altar. Yikes. I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like telling people that you shouldn't have blasphemy laws, kind of censoring on behalf of foreign countries is probably good. Let's see. Kruberito says, has this law been passed or brought into law? So has this law been proposed or brought into law? So this is passed the House. So as I'm sure most people are probably aware, bills need to pass both chambers of the legislature. And then there's like a reconciliation. So what usually happens is it passes one, the bill goes over, the different bills are reconciled. And once everything is passed by both houses, an identical bill is reconciled and passed by both houses, then it's signed by the president. So obviously this is not signed into law yet because Joe Biden hasn't signed it, though I'm sure he would. And it needs to pass through the Senate as well. So right now it is just a bill passed by the House. But the reason this is so important is it seems very likely that the bill will fly through the Senate. Because all of the opposition was probably going to be in the Republican side, even though many Republicans also signed on with this. But who knows? Like we see with the SPLC, there is opposition on the left. You would imagine you would see a number of Democrats oppose this. I think more Democrats actually oppose this in the House than Republicans ultimately. So who knows? Maybe it will get knocked down in the Senate. But as it stands, it looks like it has a decent chance of becoming a real law. Let's see. Paladin YYZ says, a Hamilton, a Lincoln, and a Lindsey Graham for your thoughts on all our erudition making us functionally literate in a world of legal linguistic nonsense so insane that all of our ups become downs. I'm not exactly sure everything you're asking there, buddy, but if what you're saying is that the fact that people have become literate makes them like more likely to buy into legalese, then yeah, that's probably right. Like the interesting thing about our situation is more people are literate than have ever been literate before, but most of the people who are literate are much less literate than the people who would have become, you know, those that read in previous generations. So like the literate Civil War soldier was writing letters that sound far more intelligent than the average person today, even though the average person today is far more likely to be able to read. And really all that does is make us more perceptible or more receptive to propaganda, because that allows for mass communication in the written word. And so you have what kind of ends up happening, ironically, is you have a population that is far more likely to be able to read, but is also far more likely to absorb the propaganda, the mass propaganda that is provided to them, because even though they're more likely to read, they do so on a much lower level. They are far less discerning in what they end up ingesting. Let's see. Brad Barnes says, this is on one hand the most predictable betrayal, but nonetheless still remarkable. Vexatious? Sorry, I don't know. Never seen that variation on being vexed. We are ruled over by our enemies. I mean, yeah, this is unfortunately, like I said, this is predictable if you've been following a lot of what's been happening with these laws in places like Florida and South Dakota. This echoes again the executive order that was already done by Donald Trump. So yeah, if you've been following this, you could have known even what organization they would use when they passed it in the United States. Unfortunately, you're right that this is a serious problem. Even though it's predictable, it is disappointing. Ben Dover says, since the government is close to declaring the Jews killed Jesus illegal, it's now a required confession. Daniel didn't hide while praying, even with the threat of lion's den, Christ is king. Again, to be clear, this is the definition tied in, I want to be really clear, in the educational sense, attached to Title VI and its implications for organizations that receive federal funding. Now, again, I think that will have a wider chilling effect. And the fact that declarations that exist in the Bible multiple times appear in the examples of anti-Semitism for the organization that is referenced as the definer of anti-Semitism in the bill is chilling. It's a serious problem. But I just want to be clear, no one is going to jail for reading the Bible in church on Sunday. However, there is the question of whether or not you could lose federal funding or be subject to a civil rights lawsuit if you're using something like that in, say, an educational program. And of course, like we said, that's going to filter out to other organizations. So it starts in the universities or in public education, but it almost invariably moves to every other organization in the United States. Tim Miller says, TLDR, it bans a certain perception of Jews with the Civil Rights Act. Yeah, if you want to just boil it down real quick, that's exactly what it does. It's not the clarity of what a certain perception of Jews means is farmed out to an international organization. But the Civil Rights Act is the mechanism of enforcement for this bill, which, again, I know a lot of people think it sounds radical. It sounds crazy. Oh, the Civil Rights Act is what, you know, makes it okay for us to eat at the same lunch counter. I hear what you're saying, guys, but you have to understand that that is way in the rearview mirror. The Civil Rights Act did that like 70 years ago. Okay. What the Civil Rights Act does now is very different. And you need to understand that it has been used to create a situation where the Constitution can be circumvented. And so when you see things like this, where people are like, oh, it's not a big deal, they're just tweaking civil rights law. No, actually, that's a huge deal, because civil rights law is the law. Civil rights law is the Constitution. And no, oh, well, this can't violate the Constitution. It's not really a protection, because the civil rights law violates the Constitution all the time. It happens all the time. It's not a big deal at this point. It's not treated as a big deal. Let's see. Paladin YYZ says, meant to say functionally illiterate. Okay, well, that makes far more sense. Okay. Things getting so crazy that our minds have no way of rationally comply with our rulers, like a fifth grader trying to negotiate a lease contract. Yeah, that is exactly correct. One of the key things is just piling so much law and so much compliance on top of people that everyone is always in violation of it, right? This is the case with, say, the IRS. The tax law is opaque for a reason. It is meant to be confusing so that people are always in violation of it. That's the point of it, so that they can drop the hammer at any time. Because as long as you are always guilty of violating the law, then it really just comes down to operating in the state of exception. Are you the friend or are you the enemy? If you're the friend, we won't apply the law to you. If you're the enemy, the law will apply to you. Everyone's in violation of the law. We designed the law for everyone to be in violation of the law. And so the only question is, are you on the right side? That's the only way you can avoid prosecution under the law. Let's see. Robert Weisenfeld says, right-wing guy back again. No idea how anyone could think This bill doesn't make Jews look terrible, yet I find it impossible to explain this to my Jewish boomer cons. Any ideas? I mean, it's really simple, man. If you have a situation where you're worried about people seeing, having a perception of people that's negative, and then you create a law banning that perception, that's going to make people feel angry about it. Like that is, if you're getting a special carve out for what people can say and do, that's going to increase animus, right? So if you really want to have this equal treatment, then the key thing to do is to actually have the law apply equally. But if you're going to create this special carve out and you're obviously not creating it for other groups, this is naturally going to breed animus. So yeah, this bill is unfortunately going to do the opposite of what it says, and naturally so. I don't envy you trying to convince a lot of people who would benefit from this bill of that fact, because ultimately they won't benefit from it. But I good luck, man, because that's been a hard sell. I mean, Republicans have been trying to do that for, say, like the Black community for a long time, right? And that it wins some people over. You know, God bless many people who are trying to do that, but ultimately it's been a failure with the wider community, because the wider protections just seem more advantageous. And that's unfortunate. That's why you don't want to create wider cutouts. That's why you don't want to create special benefits for different groups. Because when you do, you create this animus, you create this situation. But unfortunately, in kind of a democracy, people would rather just have those carve outs built into the law than kind of go with the law applies to everybody. We've just seen that play out over and over again. And I don't know if there's a solution to that in kind of our current system, because it seems that's what people prefer at the end of the day. Let's see. Maximilian Cunnings says, are we winning or are enemies losing? What do? Like I said, I think that the protests on college campuses, if you just let the left fight, are a win, because it's two factions that hate you fighting over an organization that hates you, and they're tearing each other apart in election year. So that's a win if you let it be. But are we winning on this? Because look what's happening with this bill. Look what's happening with the way that some right-wing governors are wanting to step in, right-wing politicians are wanting to step in. No, I don't think that's a win. I think that's a serious problem. And this is a real issue that the right needs to get a hold of. You can't say we don't want to play identity politics, blah, blah, blah. And then the minute a group that you favor gets into trouble, you swing in and create special legislation creating carve-outs in civil rights law. That's insane. I mean, that's just absolutely insane. And that is losing for somebody. That is certainly losing for the majority of people who vote Republican. But what can you do, I guess? Let's see. Creeper Weirdo says, how did it go? The only time they reach across the aisle is to something about the Eiffel Tower. I wish I could remember. Yes, we'll avoid completing that joke for obvious reasons, but thank you, Cooper Weirdo. He also says, I was going to make a put away the woke joke, but this might be a real attempt to do that. Yeah, this is most definitely a formal attempt to try to put the woke away, right? That is creating a carve out in civil rights law to try to silence part of the leftist coalition. That is a power move. That is certainly a strong attempt to do that. Will they be successful? Will that work? We will see. Only time will tell. I have a cigar resting on this question. But this is probably the best example of trying to put the woke away. There's simply no arguing that situation. Though really it is just about actually enshrining an unprincipled exception to the woke. I don't think they'd put the woke away. At the very most, they would enshrine an unprincipled exception to the woke. That would be what actually happens here. All right, guys, gonna go ahead and wrap this up. Of course, if this is your first time on the channel, please make sure to go ahead and subscribe, turn on the bell notification, all that stuff, so you can watch these streams when they go live. If you'd like to get these broadcasts as podcasts, you need to check out the Ari McIntyre Show on your favorite podcast platform. When you do, leave your rating or review. It really helps with the algorithm magic. Exciting Tuesday, my book comes out, The Total State. Very excited about this, guys. I'm going to do a celebration stream on Tuesday to kind of go over it. I'll talk a little bit about the book, but most importantly, it's going to be kind of an ask me anything. Just kind of hang out with you guys, kind of a thank you stream, just celebrating the book coming out, because I couldn't have done it without you. It's been an amazing ride. I can't believe this is real. So very exciting. If you'd like to get the book, of course, you want to get it on Tuesday when it comes out, you need to go and pre-order. So go ahead and do that on Amazon. That's probably your best place to do it at this point. It's also at Barnes & Noble Books a Million. But if you want to make sure you have a physical copy in your hand on Tuesday, your best bet is to go ahead and put in that order now on Amazon. Thank you once again, everyone, for coming by. And as always, I will talk to you next time.